welcome to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. We have a cracker of a show for you tonight, gals and gents. Wash your black heads, grab a seat, and enjoy this episode of Dragnet, entitled Red Light Bandit.
Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
NBC brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to robbery detail. A ruthless fiend roams the streets of your city masquerading as a police officer. For months, helpless citizens have been robbed, beaten senseless, and kidnapped. The criminal is a twisted genius, vicious, cunning. Your job is to get him.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime, investigated and solved by the men who unrelentingly stand watch on the security of your home, your family, and your life. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files, from beginning to end, from crime to punishment. Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, June 4th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Ed Backstrand, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. I was on my way back from communications, and it was 11:13 p.m. when I got to room 27A. Robbery detail.
Oh, hi, Joe.
Hi, Ben. Did you get that message to call home?
Yeah, bad news.
What's the matter?
That doggone kid of mine, chicken pox.
Oh, again?
Last year it was the mumps. Year before that, the measles. Every time I get set for a vacation, he decides to catch some.
Well, forget it, Ben. Think what a comfort he's going to be in your old age.
Go ahead, lad. You'll find out.
Yeah.
How are you, Friday, Romero?
Fine. What can we do for you?
You don't look like you remember me.
Oh, no, wait a minute. Name's Savage, isn't it? George?
It's Johnny, Sergeant. Johnny Savage, remember now?
Oh, sure. Those liquor store robberies out in the Wilshire District. About 6-7 years ago, wasn't it?
10 years, Romero. You ought to remember that. You were at the trial.
We testify in court every week. 10 years is a long time.
It's longer in the state pen. It's a lot longer.
Yeah, you cried a little at that trial, didn't you, Savage? You said we beat that confession out of you.
Yeah, that's why I figured I'd drop in for a little visit to kind of apologize to you fellas. You gave me a square deal. I guess I kind of lost my head. I figured I'd apologize.
Oh, that's all right, Savage. When'd you get out?
A couple of weeks ago. I did it the hard way. Served 10 flat. I don't owe my day.
You find a job yet?
Yeah, Friday. I'm working nights.
What kind of a job?
Laborer in a warehouse, south end of town.
Good. You decided to level?
10 years in prison's a long time. You learn a lot of things. Nights are long, you think a lot. You get things straightened out.
I hope you mean that.
Sure I mean it, Friday. I've got everything straightened out. I know who my friends are, and I know who to watch out for.
You sound like maybe you're on the right track.
I got it figured, Romero. I'm like you two fellas. You caught me red-handed and you sent me up for 10 years.
Well, you did all right, Savage. 5 armed robberies. You got off pretty easy.
You got a break, Savage. Make the best of it.
Sure, I'm not kicking. 10 years, a real break.
That's right.
Well, just dropped in for a little visit. Maybe I'll see you fellas sometime.
All right, Savage. Keep your nose clean?
Sure. No hard feelings.
No.
You just took 10 years of my life, that's all.
There's no such thing as a man going through prison without changing. And Ben and I have seen him switch in both directions. Some men learn their lesson after they land behind bars, and when they're released, they turn into good citizens. Johnny Savage was sour. We made a mental note to check him out later on, and then we went down to the record bureau and pulled his coming out mug. That's about all we had time for, because about an hour later, we started to get busy.
Hot shot, Joe. Grab it.
On the corner of Selma and Naples, the drugstore, 211 and probable attack. On the corner of Selma and Naples, 211 and...
What you got, Joe?
Selma and Naples, 211 and attack. Come on.
Here we are, Joe. Over there on the four corners.
Yeah.
All right.
Come on. We got the story from the victim, the store owner, Mr. Thomas. For the most part, it was the usual rundown of an early morning holdup. There was only one exception.
Oh, I've had young hoodlums try to hold me up before, but there was nothing like this one.
How you mean, Mr. Thomas?
Well, he came in here just before closing, and ordinarily I'd have kept an eye out, because that's the time to look for him. But this fella came to the door and said he was a policeman, so I let him in. He looked like a cop. Barged right up to me and the wife behind the counter and pointed a gun. And she screamed, and he hit her in the face with the butt of the gun. Sergeant, it was horrible.
That's the way it started, and that's the way it kept going. Because most of the victims and most people don't realize that as a citizen, they have the right to check on police officers' identification when in doubt. After we got the story from Mr. Thomas and checked the store in the neighborhood, Ben and I headed back for the office.
Attention, all units. At the end of North Baxter Road near Hillcrest, victim of 211 and slugging. Car 7172, take the call, code 3. Attention, all units.
That's four blocks away from the last one. Let's roll on it, huh, Ben?
Right, I'll hit the siren. You get the light.
By the time Ben and I got up to the end of North Baxter, the men from Car 71 were already there. The victim was telling his story. His face looked like it had been through a meat grinder.
Yeah, we're just shifting the car into second to make the hill when I hear this siren behind me, and I see this red light flashing in the side view mirror. Well, naturally, I pulled over to the curb and... I was just reaching for my driver's license when the cop runs up, yanks me out of the car and starts clubbing me in the face with the butt of his gun.
Did you get a look at him? Think you can describe him?
No, I'm afraid not. He swung me around and kept me staring into that red light on his car all the time he was beating me. After a while, everything just went black. When I woke up, my wallet was gone, all my monies.
45 minutes later, Ben and I were interviewing the third victim, a young housewife out in the Wilshire District. Same trademark.
I tried to tell him I didn't have any money, but he wouldn't listen. He kept holding me by the throat, beating me with his fist like he enjoyed it. Beating me.
Yeah, all right, Mrs. Jameson. Could you tell us how he got in the house?
He came in the front door and rang the bell. I opened the door, but I left the burglar chain on. He said he was a policeman. So when he demanded I open the door all the way, I did. Then he grabbed me.
And you can't describe the man for us, Mrs. Jameson?
He was tall. And he had dark hair and big hands. It was like a nightmare. A horrible nightmare.
Tall, dark hair, big hands. Your guess the same as mine, Joe?
Maybe. Let's wait and see. Come on, let's check with the boss.
Hi, Mike.
Hi. He's waiting for you. In there.
Come on, Ben.
Chief of Detectives Office. Hannon.
Sit down.
Yeah, Skipper.
All right, you two, let's have it.
The guy with the red light?
Yes, the guy with the red light posing as a policeman. Why hasn't he been picked up?
You know as much about it as we do, Ed. We got our first call around midnight. He knocked over a drugstore out on Selma. He hasn't stopped working since.
Didn't you get any definite lead on him? No description, no license number?
Nothing. He's tall, big hands, dark hair, that's all.
Fine. Either of you got any ideas?
Could be anybody, Skipper, with that description.
You're sure it wasn't anybody on the force?
We sent all the victims down to personnel. Lowry showed him the mug book of all police officers. Wasn't one of our men.
Works fast. Drugstore, motorist, a pedestrian, a housewife out in the Wilshire District. Went right in the house after her. Four of them, right in a row.
Five.
Huh?
There's a 20-year-old kid in the next room. Came in just before you got here. A couple of hours ago, he was sitting in a car with this girl up in Mulholland Drive. This red light bandit comes along, slugs him, and kidnaps the girl.
Kidnap? She still miss?
Not a trace.
When did this happen?
A couple of hours ago. They brought the kid over from Georgia Street Hospital. We can talk to him now. He's had a bad time. Right in here.
Okay.
Pete, we're going to have to ask you a few more questions.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It feels a little better now.
This is Sergeant Friday and Sergeant Romero.
Hi, Pete.
Hi.
Can you tell us what time the trouble started?
Oh, about 10:15, 10:30. Sally and I were sitting in the car talking about where we were going on our honeymoon. We're going to be married next month. And then this car pulls up behind us and starts flashing a red spotlight on us, and a guy runs over and pulls open the door. He said he was a cop.
Did you get a good look at his car, Pete?
I think it was a black sedan.
Did you get a look at the man, Pete?
No, I didn't. It was pretty dark, and he kept me staring into that red spotlight. It all happened so fast. Then he started slugging me, and I went down.
What happened then?
Well, the next thing I knew, Sally was screaming. He had one hand on her throat, and he had her backed up against the side of the car. He was beating her with the other hand. Some kind of a short billy club. I got up, and I started for him, and he slugged me again. When I came to, Sally was gone.
Anybody check the area up there, Ed?
Yeah, Davis and Griffin. Didn't find a thing.
Oh, Sergeant, you gotta find her. You got to. I wouldn't know what to tell her folks. I wouldn't know what to say.
That's all right, Pete. We'll find her. You take it easy.
Got a hot shot, Ed, up in Summit Road near Westmore. A woman, unconscious. Ambulance follow-up. Possible dead body.
All right, Hannon. Look after Pete here. Friday, Romero, let's go. Up ahead, Romero, to the right.
Okay, Skipper.
Yeah, there's the ambulance and the cruiser car.
You're a lonely-looking spot.
All right, come on.
Hiya, Doc. What'd you find?
Hiya, fellas. Right over here. Just gonna take her in.
Where'd you find her?
Over there, by the side of the road. Somebody driving by saw her. They called us.
Any identification?
This bracelet on her wrist.
To my dearest Sally and Pete. December 25th, 1947.
That's a girl, all right. What are the chances, Doc?
I wouldn't bet on them. Pretty bad shape. Well, have you seen enough?
Yeah. Friday, Romero, call the crime lab and check the area for footprints and tire tracks. I'll ride back in the ambulance with the girl. If she regains consciousness, I want to talk to her. All right?
Okay, Ed.
I'll meet you in the office by 8:30. We're working straight through till we get this guy.
See you at the office, Giver.
What time you got, Ben?
7 minutes to 4. Long night.
Hey, that car up there ahead. Let's take a look at it, huh?
Black sedan. Hey, look, he's flashing a red spot on that convertible.
Come on.
He sees us, Joe. He's pulling away.
Get that gas pedal down to the floor.
Already there. He's turning off right.
Hit the siren. I'll get the light. We're gaining a little, Ben. Next corner to the left.
Where'd he go?
The fancy driver. Try the alley up ahead to the left here.
Must have turned up that cross street.
Get through the alley and double back on him.
Right.
There he is, Ben. Look out.
Watch it, Joe. Watch it. He's going to ram us.
We got hit just in front of the rear bumper. Our car was forced into the curbing and it turned over. He was real lucky. He kept right on going. But this time, Ben and I were sharing the luck. All we got out of it was a couple of nasty cracks in the head and a few bruises, but it was enough to keep us in a hospital under observation for a day. By this time, Ed Backstrand was fuming. So were the newspapers. During the day we spent in the hospital, a red light bandit went on a real blitz. He pulled 6 more jobs, 1 liquor store, 2 residential holdups, and 3 car robberies. 5 of the 6 victims were slugged and beaten. Davis and Griffin had taken over for Ben and me, and by the time we got back on the job, they'd built up a lead for us.
We've been working with Wilkerson up in auto theft, Joe. He's used 4 stolen cars already. We got the makes and numbers on each one of them.
How about the dark sedan he was driving when he rammed it?
The boys picked it up this morning out on Sepulveda. We're checking it for prints now.
Oh, that's fine, Dave. You got any description on the guy yet?
No luck there, Joe. He works too fast.
Nothing at all?
The same as you had. Tall, black hair, big hands. Loves to use them.
Friday, Romero, got a minute?
Okay, Skipper. Check you later, honey.
Sure thing, boys.
Sit down. How do you feel?
Pretty fair, Ed.
Little stiff here and there.
All right, did Davis fill you in?
Up to date.
Okay, I just called the doctor who's handling Sally Wilder, Pete's girlfriend, you remember?
Oh, yeah.
She's been in pretty bad shape since we found her up there on Summit Road. This morning she took a turn for the better. She's conscious and her doctor thinks she might be able to talk to us a little bit.
Good, when?
About an hour. I cleared it with the doctor and with her family. You'll only be able to stay a couple of minutes, so make the most of them. That's all.
All right, Ed, we'll check with you later.
Sir? Hey, Joe, Ben, here's some mail came for you fellas while you were gone.
Oh, thank you, Mark. We're going over to the county hospital. We ought to be back in a couple hours.
Okay. Say, there's been a couple of phone calls, too.
Yeah, anything important?
I don't think so. The guy just called to say hello. Said his name was Johnny Savage. Just called to say hello.
I presume you men are aware of the girl's critical condition.
Yeah, that's right, Dr. Froman.
We saw her before she was taken here at the hospital.
Yes. You understand, of course, that you'll be able to see her for only a few minutes, and please try your best not to excite her, huh?
Right, Doctor.
Sally isn't able to talk. Bad mouth and face injuries. So your questions will have to be answered simply yes or no, and nod of the head.
Okay, we got you. We only have a few questions, and we want to know if she can identify the man who beat her from these pictures we've got here.
All right, Sergeant. This way, please.
Thank you.
Sally, these gentlemen are from the police department. They'd like to ask you a few questions. Now, there's no need to be nervous or afraid. Just simply nod your head yes or no. Now, that's fine. All right, Sergeant.
Sally, did you see the man who attacked you?
Yes. She says yes.
Did you get a good look at his face? You did. All right, Sally, now you can answer these three together, just yes or no. Was he tall? Did he have dark hair? Did he have large hands? He did. Ben.
All right, yeah, Jim.
Hand me the folder.
Yeah. Here you are.
Thanks. Now, there's just one more thing, Sally. I'm going to show you some pictures. Now, take all the time you want before you make up your mind about each one. If you recognize any one of these men as the person who attacked you, just nod your head. All right? All right, it's fine. Good. Here's the first one. No? All right. Here's the next one. No. How about this one? No? All right. Here's another. Do you recognize him? This was the man? Are you sure, Sally? Thank you. That's all. Let's go.
Did you find what you wanted, Sergeant?
Yes, Doctor, we did. Here. It's this one.
Nice looking chap. Who is he, Sergeant?
His name's Savage, Dr. Froman. Johnny Savage. When we got back to the office, we checked in with Ed Backstrand. In 5 minutes, an all-points bulletin and a full description of the suspect was broadcast to every radio car, every motorcycle officer, to every sheriff and law enforcement agency in Los Angeles and Southern California. By nightfall, the manhunt was on. More than a dozen extra patrol units were called in for duty that night, and when they pulled out of the police garage, the name, the picture, and the full description of Johnny Savage was in the possession of every officer. The same for the patrolmen. Whether they walked a beat downtown or out in the residential areas, the picture of Johnny Savage went with them. Everything was done that could be done. On the second night of the manhunt, far out on the edge of town, Johnny Savage, the red light bandit, got his 12th victim, a 63-year-old storekeeper.
Attention, all units. 939 Markham Street, near Clark. 211 and Slugging, code 3, ambulance dispatched. All units, 939 Markham Street, near Clark.
Here it is, Skipper. Tie-in.
What'd you get?
Wilkerson lifted the prints off that black sedan that rammed Joe and me.
Yeah?
They belonged to Johnny Savage.
Yeah, good.
That storekeeper last night, it is Savage, all right. Victim identified him from his mug.
All right. We got enough in this Savage guy to put him on ice for life. All we have to do now is to get him.
Now, look, the way we figure it, Ed, this red light bandit is using stolen cars with cold plates, so there's no way of tracking down the cars at regular commercial garages. He's got to be running private garages someplace around town.
All right, let's get the neighborhood patrolman on the job. Advertise it. All over town. It's a city ordinance, isn't it? People who rent private garages are bound by law to register the car and license number with the police. Start a campaign if you want, but find those cars.
Right.
Yeah, wait a minute. Hello, Backstrand. Yeah? When? I see. Yeah, thanks.
What is it, Ed?
It was the hospital. About the girl, Sally.
Sally Wilder? What about her?
She died 5 minutes ago.
That night, everybody went back on the job as usual. The cruiser cars, the patrolmen, the motorcycle officers, and about a dozen decoy cars. Armed police women riding alone in cars or parked in lonely spots with a police officer escort. Our car, 80K, was still in the garage for repairs, so they assigned us another one. And we started to make the rounds. Everything was usual. Except one thing. We weren't tracking down just a thief anymore or a sadist who liked to beat people's faces in. We were out to get a murderer. It was a perfect night for the suspect. Dark, no moon. I gave Ben 2-1 odds, and I put up $5 that we'd get Savage that night. I lost the $5. We cruised until 7 the next morning, but there wasn't even a nibble. We had breakfast at the Federal Cafe, a little restaurant down the street from the City Hall, and it was about 8:15 when we got back to the office. We were pretty tired.
Robert Detail, Romero.
I would like to speak to Sergeant Friday.
Just a minute. For you, Joe.
Okay, thanks. Friday talking.
Sergeant Friday, I want to talk to you.
Well, I'm listening. Go ahead.
I mean, I want to talk to you in person as soon as possible.
Can't you tell me over the phone? What is it?
I cannot tell you over the phone. It is very important. Can you come now?
Well, now, look, mister, I'm awful sorry, but we're very busy down...
554 Ramona Avenue. Can you come now?
Well, what's this all about? Who is this speaking?
My name is Carl Savage. My son's name is John.
Here it is, Joe. Neat looking little place.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I'm Sergeant Friday. You Mr. Savage?
Yeah, come in.
Okay. This is my partner, Sergeant Romero.
How do you do? I will be brief, gentlemen. I am the father of John Savage. I wish for you to catch him. I will help you.
I noticed the name on the mailbox outside, Mr. Savage. Changed your name lately?
I changed my name 10 years ago when John first got into trouble. My own name I had to change, the shame. Always from him, my son, shame.
Mr. Savage, has your son been home since he got out of prison?
Yeah, many times, to ask for money. I would not give him any, so he struck me. Last night, I read in the newspaper the little girl he beat up. She is dead. Then I make up my mind.
Do you know where your son is now, Mr. Savage?
Not now, no. But our garage, has a car in there. It is not his, I know. Also in the garage, I find many license plates. I find spotlights with red glass lens.
But you don't have any idea where we could find
him. No, but he will come back. He always comes back for money.
We're going to station an officer here in the house, Mr. Savage.
Anything you want, if it will catch him. He's bad, Sergeant. Like something poison. All true, he's bad.
See a sewing basket over there, Mr. Savage. The wife live here with you?
10 days ago, before this starts, I bury Gertrude, my wife, his mother. Sergeant, for 10 years she is sick, but for 10 years she stays alive to see him from prison. 10 days ago, she died. He did not even come to the funeral.
Did your son have any idea that you might call us?
No, I don't think so. But when you catch him, give me a gun. With my own two hands, I will kill him, Johnny Savage.
Before we left, we called Ed Backstrand and we brought him up to date. He sent 3 detectives out to relieve us, Davis, Griffin, and Marsh. We told them to keep an eye on the house and the stolen car in the garage. That night after dinner, Ed Backstrand, Ben, and I went out and relieved them. We parked the cruiser car in the garage next door, and then we took up our posts. Carl Savage had a light supper, and then he went to bed about 9. The 3 of us sat at the front windows in the darkened house, and we waited. Ben kept his eye on the garage. Outside, across the city, the manhunt continued as usual. 3 hours went by. The waiting got monotonous.
Friday, Romero, look alive, will you?
Oh, yes, Skipper, I'm sorry.
That clock's enough to put anybody to sleep.
What time you got?
12:23 a.m.
Thanks.
The clock kept ticking. We were tired. We took turns keeping each other awake. At 2:10, I looked at my watch, and then I settled back and tried to find some kind of a comfortable position. They started so faintly, it was just like the ticking of the clock. Same rhythm. And then they came closer, and the sounds got out of rhythm. Backstrand's head came up with a snap.
Freddy, Romero, you hear that?
Yeah, Ed.
Get up to the window, watch the curtains. You see anything?
Yeah, somebody's coming.
Savage?
Can't tell. Wait a minute, he's slowing down. He's going up the driveway to the garage. He's going inside. That's him.
Come on. Watch it, he spotted us. Went over that fence into the yard.
There he is, Friday.
You hit him, Joe.
Maybe.
He's going for the street.
He's headed for that car, Ed. That sedan up on the corner there.
Yeah, Romero, go back and get the car.
Right, Skipper.
Must have parked up the block before he came around.
Where's Romero?
I don't know. Oh, here he comes now. All right, let's go.
Get that radio on, Joe.
It's already on, Ed.
All right, give him a call. Any sign yet?
No, nothing so far. Next corner to the right, Ben. Unit 80K to Control 4. 80K to Control 4.
Control 4 to Unit 80K. Go ahead.
Clear and keep Frequency 4 open. This is an emergency.
80K, roger. Frequency 4, open and clear. Attention, all units on Frequency 4. Stand by. 80K, go ahead.
There he is, Friday, up ahead. Dark blue sedan.
Control 4, we are in pursuit of the possible red light bandit. Suspect is driving a dark blue 1949 sedan. License number in the 7 column. 61 Robert 784. Use caution. Suspect is armed. Code 3.
Attention, all units. Attention, all units. Unit 80K now pursuing possible red light bandit. Suspect is driving a dark blue 1949 sedan. License number in the 7 column. 61 Robert 784. Use caution. Suspect is armed. Code 3. Your location, 80K.
Control 4. We are headed east on Wilshire Boulevard, crossing La Brea.
Attention, all units. Suspect is headed east on Wilshire Boulevard, crossing La Brea.
Watch it, Romero. Don't lose him.
I see him, Skipper.
Control 4. Still pursuing red light bandit. Headed east on Wilshire. Now crossing Rossmore.
Attention, all units. Suspect is still headed east on Wilshire. Now crossing Rossmore. Suspect is armed. Use caution. Code 3.
That truck pulling out up ahead.
Hit the siren, will you, Skipper?
Yeah.
Hold on to tight squeeze.
Keep on, Romero. A lot of traffic up ahead. He's got to slow down.
Control 4. Suspect headed east on Wilshire, crossing Western Avenue, closing in.
There he goes. Took a right down Sherman Alley. The dead end.
Yeah. Control 4. Suspect turns south into Sherman Alley, closing in on suspect.
Attention, all units. Suspect has turned south into Sherman Alley. Suspect is trapped. Converge on Sherman Alley.
There he is, Skipper. Pulling up ahead. He's jumping out.
All right, take the mic, will you, Ed? Here. Come on, Ben.
I'll direct the other cars in. If you need help, holler.
All right, Skipper.
All right, which way to go, Ben?
Down between those buildings.
Come on.
He's starting up the back fire escape.
All right, keep him busy. All right, Savage, come on down.
He wants to go the rough way.
One more chance, Savage. Come on down.
No use, Joe. He's heading up for the roof.
Come on. Well, he climbs like a monkey. Come on, let's get him.
Yeah,
all
right.
Here, I'll give you a hand.
Here's the rope. All right, where'd he go?
I don't know. Let's spread out. All right, Savage, you're through. Throw your gun out and come out with your hands up.
Watch it, Joe. He's running for the edge. He's gonna jump.
I'll get him. All right, up. Guy back here.
You lousy cop, you dirty lousy cop. I'll kill you, man.
You're through, Savage. You're through.
Good, Joe.
Yeah. Throw the cuffs on, will you?
Yeah, you just betcha. You want a smoke?
Yeah, I can sure use one. Thanks.
Quiet up here.
Yeah. I was just thinking.
Well?
Carl Savage, this guy's father.
What about him?
Nothing. What would you do, Ben, if your son was a murderer?
The story you have just heard is true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
John Savage was tried and convicted of murder in the first degree. He was executed in the lethal gas chamber at the state penitentiary. You have just heard the sixth in a new series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet is furnished by the Los Angeles Police Department.
Tonight's program is dedicated to Patrol Officer Robert Steele of the Montana State Highway Patrol, who on the morning of November 2nd, 1947, gave his life so that yours might be more secure.
Dragnet came to you from Los Angeles. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Why do those kids need cars? I bet they're driving drunk. Welcome back to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Now enjoy this episode of X-1, entitled Mars is Heaven.
Countdown for blast-off. X minus 5, minus 4, minus 3, minus 2, X minus 1. Fire! From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future. Adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years, on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company presents X minus one. Tonight's story: Mars is Heaven. First space rocket lands on Mars. What will we find? Only the ruins of a dead and deserted planet? Or will there be life? Intelligent life in some strange form that we can only imagine? Will we be welcomed with open arms? Or will the Martians treat us as invaders? Only one thing is certain. Someday, a giant metal ship will take off from Earth to travel through the black velocities, the silent gulfs of space, to descend at last into the darkness of the upper Martian atmospheres. And on that day, man will finally know the answers. The day we first land on Mars.
Now hear this, now hear this. Approaching critical deceleration. Fasten gravity suits, stand by to land.
There it is. We've intersected the course vector, sir.
All right, Mr. Lustig. Over to manual control.
Aye, sir.
Masters, sound general quarters.
Aye, sir.
Mr. Lustig, what do you make of the terrain?
There seems to be a heavy ground, Miss Captain. We won't be able to use the infrared lights.
And we'll have to come in on radar.
Isn't that a little risky, sir? Landing in the dark?
I'd rather run the danger of a blind landing, Lieutenant, than come in without the cover of darkness. Remember, we don't know what kind of reception is waiting for us down there.
Airspeed 500. Altitude now 4,000.
Bridge to engine room. Stand by for deceleration. Fire forward tubes 1 and 3. Steady as she goes, Mr. Lustig.
As she goes, sir.
Airspeed 100. Altitude 1,000.
Radar indicates a level stretch dead ahead, sir.
Skids down.
Skids checked.
Altitude 500. 4. 350. 3.
Up a point now. All right. Let's set her down. Power. Masters, quiet battle stations.
Aye, sir.
All secured, sir. Well, gentlemen, Gentlemen, we're now on Mars, April 20th, 1987, 4:33 Greenwich time. Enter that in the log, messrs.
Aye, sir.
Well, gentlemen, it's less than 2 hours till dawn. As soon as it's light, we'll send out a landing party. Masters, get me an all-over hookup.
We're all set, Captain.
Now hear this. All right, men. The smoking lamp is lit. Well, we're on Mars. The first man shipped from Earth to land here. We don't know what we're going to find or what dangers we may face. We're 17 men on an alien world. And it's up to us whether we ever get home again. The next few hours should tell the story. And I want instant obedience to all commands. I'll court-martial the first man who doesn't jump to when he's ordered. And one other thing. We may be on Mars, but this is still a United States naval vessel. Officers will conduct a personal and weapons inspection in 1 hour. That's all.
An inspection, Captain? Now?
Mr. Lustig, we've got an hour and a half to sweat out before we find out what's outside that airlock. I'd rather have a man worried about his stripes about what's waiting outside on Mars.
Now I hear this. Landing party report to forward airlock. Captain Black, Lieutenant Hingston, Lieutenant Lustig, and Dr. Horst report immediately to forward airlock. It's now landing time, minus five.
Well, they're paging us. You ready, Dr. Horst?
Yes, Mr. Lustig. As ready as I will ever be.
Come on, let's get in the lock.
Hingston, Lustig, and Horst reporting in the airlock.
Very well, sir. The captain will join you.
4 minutes to go. At least the captain would get here.
What difference does it make?
I just want to get it over with, that's all. Anybody got a cigarette?
Yeah, I think you're smoking too much, Lieutenant Lustig. Are you nervous?
Lay off, will you, Horst?
Wondering what's hidden outside underneath that ground mist? I've been giving it some thought. It'll be very interesting to find out. A very unusual planet, Mars.
Why?
It has an atmosphere. A wonderful thing, an atmosphere. Where you find one, you find life.
You mean Martians? What do you think they'll look like?
Who knows? Intelligent life can take many forms.
You mean they may have green skins and eyes on stalks or something?
The comic book conception is possible, of course. Or they may have developed far beyond us. Perhaps they have a science that can produce weapons far more dangerous than our atomic missiles.
You think we may have to fight our way up?
After all, we are invaders.
Landing time minus two.
All right, we heard this. What I'd like to find outside that airlock. Good old Illinois. Ever been there, Lustig?
Only Chicago.
Well, you ought to see my hometown. Green lawns, big white houses.
Sounds like my hometown.
My grandmother used to have one of those iron deer on the lawn. Every Halloween, we'd paint another color. One time, we painted it black and white like a Holstein cow.
Where does your family live, Dr. Horst?
I have no family. When I was a child, they were gassed to death in the Dachau concentration camp.
Oh, tough.
No, it has its advantages. I have no ties on Earth. Nothing to lose now. I imagine I'm the only one on board who is free to enjoy our present peculiar position.
All right, masters, you can button it up now.
Aye, sir.
Well, gentlemen, check your sidearms. In 1 minute, we'll be the first men to set foot on Mars. Quite an honor, eh?
As long as the medals are not awarded posthumously.
Still uneasy, Dr. Horst?
Captain Black, I've been uneasy ever since I can remember. On Earth and on Mars.
Well, 30 seconds. Give me the intercom phone, Lustig.
Yes, sir.
Masters?
Aye, sir.
Battle stations are to be manned till we return. If we're not back in 2 hours, I want no rescue party sent out. Blast off and save the ship, you understand?
Aye, sir.
All right. 5 seconds. 4, 3, 2, 1. Lustig, opened the outer airlock.
Aye, sir. It's fresh air.
Let's go. All right, now, take it easy. It's too dark to move fast.
Quiet, isn't it? Not even a wind.
Can't see anything from this ground, mister.
Quiet. We don't know what's out here. All right, come on.
What the...
Quiet. Captain, I could swear that... That sounds like a rooster.
I don't hear it anymore.
Very homely but unlikely sound. A rooster crowing on Mars?
Higston.
Aye, sir.
Set that machine gun 25 yards to the flank. We'll stay here till the ground mist lifts.
Aye, sir.
What do you make of the ground, Horse?
Grass. Plain grass. You can see some large foliage there where the mist's thinned out.
What the... Higston, hold your fire, you fool!
I hear it, Captain.
What?
Some kind of wild animal. I hit it. I could see the tracers, but it's still standing.
Come on, Horst. Doctor, where are you?
Up ahead, admiring the wild animal.
Careful, Horst. Wait for us.
Don't worry, Captain. It's an iron deer. A lawn ornament.
Well, that's impossible.
It's hollow. Interesting, isn't it? A whitewashed Victorian iron deer sitting on a lawn in the middle of Mars.
I don't understand.
Look around. The mist's lifting.
Hey, Captain, look there. It's a house, a regular old-fashioned house.
But, sir, on Mars...
Good Lord. I haven't seen carved scrolls and gingerbread like that in years. Look at that port swing. The geraniums.
There. I told you it was a rooster, Captain.
Give me the glasses, Lustig. I want to take a look through that front window. Well, there's an upright piano. Some sheet music on it. Lustig, it's beautiful Ohio.
Yeah. It can't be, sir.
Horst. Horst, do you think that civilization of two planets could be identical?
I don't know. That specific variety of geraniums is only 50 years old on Earth.
Is it logical that they should develop in Mars? How about that port swing and the piano and beautiful Ohio? Why, it's impossible.
Captain Black, this looks like the town I was born in.
Well, it looks like my hometown, too.
I thought of something, sir. It's the only solution. Maybe we're not the first ship to reach Mars from Earth.
Don't be ridiculous, Lustig.
Oh, how else can you explain it? Suppose some scientists got together. They invented some spaceship and planted a colony here. That's the only answer.
That's impossible, Lustig. In space travel, it couldn't be secret. You have any idea what ships cost, what industrial power is needed? No, there's got to be some logical reason.
I think perhaps we might find out, Captain. The light just went on in that house.
Kingston, cover that door with a machine gun.
Aye, sir.
All right, come on, Horst. We're going to ring that doorbell. There's got to be a scientific answer to all this.
And there's something moving in there.
Stand back, Horst. Give me a clear shot.
Are you sure a bullet can stop a Martian?
Steady now.
Can I help you? If you're selling anything, it's much too early.
No, wait just a minute. What town is this?
What do you mean? Are you census takers?
No. We're strangers here. We want to know how this town got here.
Is this a game?
No, it's not a game. We're from Earth.
From where?
From Earth.
Do you mean out of the ground? Are you sure you're feeling well?
Madam, we came in a flying ship across space. We're from the third planet, Earth. This is Mars. Now do you understand? Mars.
You go away now, you hear? I'll call my husband from upstairs and he'll chase you. Go on.
But this is Mars. Isn't it?
This is Green Lake, Wisconsin, in the United States of America. Bounded on the east by the Atlantic and on the west by the Pacific. Now go away. Goodbye.
Horst, do you suppose it's really possible? I've got to find out more about this.
I told you I'd call my husband. Now you go away.
You've got to tell me one thing first. What year is this?
Year? 1928, of course. For goodness sake.
You hear that, Horst? And we know it's 1987. And we know this is Mars. Of course, is it possible that we got fouled up, made some tremendous blunder, circled around, and landed back on Earth?
In 1928?
Well, maybe some switch in time or dimension. Could we have shifted somehow, gone backward in time? Oh, Horst, this won't hold water. It's not logical. We checked every mile. We went past the moon, out into space. We're on Mars. Lustig out at point. Kingston in the rear. Keep that gun at half load.
Aye, sir.
Horst, there's got to be some cold, logical solution.
Captain!
What?
That house down the street, the white one with the green shutters.
Lustig, what's the matter?
I, I never thought of... Thank God!
Lustig, come back here!
He's running for that house.
That crazy fool, after him, quick!
Lustig, stop!
Come down off of that porch!
Grandpa!
Lustig, what the devil do you think you're doing?
Albert!
Grandma, Grandpa, it is you.
Lustig, what is going on here?
Albert, it's been so many years.
How you've grown, boy.
It's so good to see you.
Lieutenant Lustig! Oh,
Captain, Grandma, I want you to meet my friends. This is Captain Black. Captain, I want you to meet my grandfolks.
Howdy. Any friend of Albert's is a friend of ours.
How long have you been here, Grandma?
Oh, a good many years, ever since we died.
Ever since you what?
Oh, yes, sir. They've been dead 30 years.
What?
Oh, now, don't you trouble yourself. It's all right. We're alive again, that's all.
Do you mean to tell me that Mars is heaven?
Oh, nonsense, no. All we know is here we're alive again. And who are we to question God's infinite ways?
Well, Lustig, we're going back to the ship.
But, Captain, I want to talk to my grandfather.
Lieutenant Lustig, I don't like any part of this. You'll come back with us if I have to club you and carry you.
I see.
Now let's go! Heaven only knows what they've run up against back at the ship. First, look at that crowd around the ship.
Looks like we're being welcomed with a celebration, Captain.
Celebration! They've abandoned ship. Every port is open. No guard set. You, master!
Hiya, Captain. Meet my old dad. Dad, that's Captain Black. He's not a bad guy for an officer.
Up on Kingston!
What's it?
Bring that band back. Use force if you have to.
Excuse me, sir. There's my Uncle George.
Kingston!
I'll be right back, Captain. Uncle George!
What the devil is going on here?
They've all found friends and relatives.
They're all here!
You're right, Captain. I found it. The whole crew's out in the crowd.
But I gave orders. Definite orders.
You don't understand, Captain.
I understand, Newton. I don't care how many relatives show up. I'll have discipline.
Johnny! Johnny, you old son of a gun!
It's you, Edward.
Yes.
It can't be.
Oh, of course it is. Johnny,
Ed.
You old...
Ed, Dr. Horst, this is my brother, Edward.
How do you do?
Hello, sir.
It's wonderful to see you, Edward. Look, I've got to get back to my ship.
Oh, Johnny, wait. I almost forgot. Mom's waiting at home.
Mom?
Yeah, and Dad, too.
Mom and Dad are alive? Then you're real, Ed.
Well, of course. Don't I feel real? How's that, huh?
Why, Ed!
We've got lunch for you, Johnny. Mom's making corn fritters.
Dr. Horst, haven't you found anybody?
No, Captain. I have nobody.
Well, then you come on home with me, right, Ed?
Why, sure.
Horst, you wouldn't believe it, but it's been 35 years since I had Mom's corn fritters. By George, 35 years.
Kitchen, so don't hold back, Johnny. You too, Dr. Horst.
Well, Johnny, you're still in the Navy, eh?
That's right, Dad. I'm in command of the ship.
We're an old Navy family, Dr. Horst. All three of our boys in the service.
Yeah, Ed was the best pilot in the Pacific, too. What did happen, Ed?
What's the difference? I'm here now.
Yeah, but...
You know, it's almost perfect. All we're missing is your brother, Will. Then the whole family could be together.
Well, it won't be long, Mom. Will's in charge of the XR-54. Next rocket coming out to Mars.
Aww. Well, little Will, when does he leave, Johnny?
Well, the takeoff's scheduled for September, but It depends on what we report.
Oh, yeah.
There's no question about that now, huh?
No.
Christmas together again. That'll be something.
It sure will, yes, sirree. Well, this calls for a celebration. How about a little of the old dandelion wine, eh, Johnny?
Now, Father, don't you go giving Johnny too much wine.
He's a big boy now, Mother. Well, sir, isn't everything just fine?
Just fine. Again, will you, Ed?
Oh, sure.
Well, Dr. Horst, what are you doing sitting over here alone? What do you think of my little family?
Very nice.
You know, I can't understand why you didn't find any folks here, Dr. Horst. It's just a shame everybody else is so happy.
Well, I never remembered my family, Mrs. Black. All I know is they were gassed at Dachau during the Second World War. When I was liberated, I was in delirium 3 months. I cannot remember anything before then. A psychiatric phenomena.
That's terrible. Isn't there anything anybody can do?
I don't want to remember. I have not had a pleasant life. I prefer to be free of emotional entanglements. They interfere with a scientific approach.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Horst.
What? Oh, I'll get it.
That's our ring, long and three shorts. I remember that.
Well, maybe we'd better call it a night. You must be getting tired, Johnny.
I'd better be going back to the ship.
Nonsense. You stay the night. We insist.
I just couldn't rest thinking of you all alone on that ship.
Why, I'll be all right. Well, good night.
Oh, wait a minute, Dr. Horst. That phone message was for you.
Me?
Yes, that's right. A message from Anna.
Anna? I don't...
Well, there, she must be an old friend. Isn't that nice?
I don't... You sure it was for me? I don't remember any Anna.
Well, she asked if you were better.
Perhaps she's someone who knew you at Dachau.
Anna?
She said she's coming over here first thing in the morning. So, you'll have to stay over.
Yes,
well,
but...
that settles it, then. You stay here, Horst. You can bunk with me in my old room. Yeah, but, Johnny, we thought you'd like to be with Edward.
So you could talk the way you used to.
Well, we can't put Dr. Horst on the daybed. I think we'd better share the room tonight. Be plenty of time for talking, Ed.
Yes, I guess so.
Well, I suppose I better drop back to the ship. You know, Ed, security check.
But why do you have to do that here?
I don't know, Mom. There's no good reason, I guess. Well, suppose we skip it tonight, huh? Well, good night, everybody.
Oh, it's good to have you home, Johnny.
It's good to be home, Mom.
Captain Black, You asleep?
No, I've been thinking about what we were expecting. Green-skinned Martians. All the time there was only Mom and Dad and Edward waiting. That's funny what tricks your imagination can play on you. Well, I guess Mars is heaven, Horst.
You know, I've been thinking about Martians, too. Captain, just suppose there were Martians, and they saw us land, and suppose they thought of us as invaders. What would be the best weapon they could use against our atom bombs, huh?
I don't see what you're getting at.
They would want to disarm us first, huh? To wipe out all suspicion, to make us feel at home. Captain, suppose this house isn't real. Suppose the people are just images stolen from our own memories by Martians, created for us by telepathy. Hypnotist.
Oh, that's the craziest theory I ever heard.
Maybe that's why there was no one for me. Because in all my life, there is no happy memory, no real loved person, not even my mother. I don't remember her. Only the piles of rotting corpses at Dachau. There was no happy emotion for these people to recreate.
How about that phone call? Anna?
Yes, Anna. I didn't remember who she was, but I do now. I just remembered. When I was freed from Dachau, sick, delirious, I raved about a wonderful, kind nurse named Anna that took care of me.
Well, there you are. It's logical. She's coming to see you tomorrow.
But there was no Anna. I'd been nursed by a man.
What?
Anna was only a dream. And there's only one way they could have learned about her, by reading my subconscious mind.
That's impossible, Horst.
Why? The whole crew was thinking of home. Suppose the Martians read our minds.
Yes, but if there are Martians...
If there are, they have us separated. Each man in a different house, sleeping. Trusting. No one at the guns.
I left my pistol downstairs. Do you think there's something to this, Horst?
It's a perfect trap, Captain. Who would suspect his own mother? His grandparents? How easy. Just a knife in the heart of each sleeping man.
That's impossible, Horst. We've got to get back to the ship.
Listen. The crickets have stopped. Come on. We don't know when they change back to... whatever they really are.
All right, careful.
Where are you going, John?
Ahead. We wanted a drink of water, that's all, Ed.
You're not thirsty, John. You don't want a drink.
Look out!
You don't want a
His
drink.
His face! It's changing! He's a Martian!
Run, Horst! Run!
You can't get away, John!
This way, Horst! Horst, where are you?
Hello! Hello! Can you hear me, Earth? This is Captain John Black, the XR-53, calling for Mars. I've locked myself in the ship, but they've crippled it. I can't take off or fire the guns, and they're coming for me now, the Martians. I'm all alone here. All the rest are dead. Hinkston, Lustig, Dr. Horst. Poor Horst, he didn't even reach the door. Listen, listen. They're trying to break through the hull. Edward and Mom and Dad and all the folks. But they're changing now. They're melting and changing back into... They're Martians. Can you understand? Martians, not men. They made us think that Mars was heaven and we fell into the trap. Can you hear me, Earth? You've got to stop the next rocket. Listen, tell my brother Will. Tell my brother not to come. They'll trap him too. They'll kill them all. Hello? Hello? Can you hear me, Earth? This is John Black on Mars. Hello, Earth? This is John Black on Mars. Hello, Earth. Hello, Earth.
Tonight, X-1 has brought you the science fiction classic, Mars is Heaven, written by Ray Bradbury and adapted for radio by Ernest Kenoy. Featured in the cast were Wendell Holmes as Captain Black and Peter Capell as Dr. Horst, with Bill Zuckert as Masters, Bill Lipton as Hinkston, Margaret Berlin as the old lady, Bill Griffiths as Edward, Ken Williams as Lustig, Ethel Everett as Mom, and Edwin Jerome as Dad. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Fred Wayne and is a transcribed NBC Radio Network production.
Thank you for listening to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Join us again next week at the same time on the mighty KONR. Don't forget to play What Will Mrs. Thompson Say at lgab.com.